Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice with the government. Get on. Welcome the best 15 minutes or so in the universe. It's Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. Gary Smith is over there, and Mark Garagus is going to be joining us in 1 second, God willing. We're probably going to talk about this whole Cain Velasquez thing, because that's the breaking news.
Absolutely, yeah. That's Mark's newest client that we teased on the last episode.
Yeah, well, so we'll set the table.
Mark's actually joining us right now, so it'll take him a second here to get connected to audio. So yeah, we'll set the table, which is former UFC heavyweight champion and certainly in the conversation for the greatest of all time when it comes to UFC heavyweight fighters, Cain Velasquez, reportedly chased down a gentleman in his car for several miles and then fired several shots at that car, ultimately hitting the person he was chasing, stepfather. And this is all because the person he was chasing allegedly molested someone in Cain's family over 100 times.
Did he hit Cain? Cain hit the guy he was shooting at, or just
He did not. There were three people in the car. He hit the stepfather who was driving in the arm and torso, and he is expected to survive. This is all per news reports I'm reading. I don't have any inside dirt from Mark or anything like that.
Well, Mark has joined us now. I'm not sure if his mic's hot. Is it?
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. All right, so the skinny. As we speak, Cain is incarcerated.
Correct. We've got a hearing on Monday, also the arraignment. He's held right now. I was just telling you on ACS. He's held right now on no bail, meaning he can't bail out. The irony is that the accused child molester was also no bail, meaning he didn't have to post bail. He was just let out. And I'm not saying anything about the reports or the client or anything else. I'm just basing on what the DA has said and what has been reported. This whole situation is a massive failure of the criminal justice system. I'll get into more of it Monday after we do the court hearing. But a colossal, you and I have talked, Adam, on this show for, I don't know, what, 8 years, 7 years, about all of the failures in the criminal justice system. This may be crystallized as to one of the most abominable failures I've ever encountered.
Is the DA kind of a Soros-backed, soft-on-crime kind of guy that you hear about in some of these cities like Philadelphia or maybe San Francisco, L.A.? What's his history?
Not known for that, although in this case, in that county I just mentioned to you, 10 years ago, my then partner tried a case in that county where a gentleman, a client of the firm's, William Lynch, had tracked down the priest who was at the, you know, the whatever the pedophilia parish was, that they, where they have retired, defrocked pedophilia types, house, and apparently wreaked revenge on him. And William Lynch was acquitted 10 years ago, and here we are again with an allegation. Like I'm saying, I'm not conceding anything. All I'm telling you is what the DA has said. The DA has basically characterized this as Cain wreaking havoc or taking the law into his own hands. And I don't know. I'm interested in your crystal brain here, because I don't know. I haven't seen anybody who, based on what the district attorney has said, believes that this is a case where somebody should be charged with a life sentence and incarcerated with no bail.
Well,
based on what they're saying.
Right. This is the man who was shot at. Now, what we were talking about, and you tell me how much of this is factors in. We're talking about James Tubbs, a.k.a. Hannah Tubbs, who committed this atrocity on this 10-year-old and then started identifying as a woman. And our DA was worried about the kind of treatment he would get or she would get inside of a male prison. And we do know that pedophilia is frowned upon inside of a male prison. So is some of these decisions, or is it a factor that they go, if I send this person to prison versus let them out on their own recognizance, might they suffer some harm in prison? Is that a factor in this?
I can't do a collective psychoanalyzing of what goes into the prosecutor's calculations. This is what I'll tell you what I know. I think for the first time, and I know George Gascon, I actually think quite highly of him. And I think for the first time when the tape was released of this particular defendant Tubbs talking to his father.
Jailhouse, I think you, phone call, yes.
Yes. And it was such an abomination, but not surprising in the end. I've heard jail calls for years. But it was the first time that the district attorney here in L.A. County, George Gascon, actually reversed the policy. Because it was just, I mean, anybody who's clear thinking or rational would listen to that and just say, how ridiculous. But this case, you've got a person who is charged with hundreds, apparently, according to the DA or according to law enforcement, in Santa Clara County, different county, not George Gascon, but a different DA, hundreds of acts of child molestation. And I'm not going to address the specific incident, but released with no bail, meaning on his own recognizance. The DA says over his objections, I have no reason to believe otherwise, but I don't know yet. We'll see. And apparently not wearing, as far as I can tell, it hasn't been reported that he's got that anywhere on it does he have at the time of this alleged shooting or whatever it is, does he have a GPS device or anything else? And apparently the child care center wasn't lawfully licensed at the time, where it's what sounds like it's ground zero for child molestation in that county. And somebody's got to say to themselves, what are we doing here? What is happening here? How does this make any sense? And why are we saying to civilians, don't take the law into your own hands?
Well, someone's got to take the law into somebody's hands is basically what you're saying. If the government isn't taking the law into their own hands, you know, if they say, don't take the law in your own hands, I agree. If someone murders my daughter and then they just let him leave, well, then you're not taking the law into your hands, lawmakers and judges and DAs.
I showed Gary something today, and I know it's kind of about that you had tweeted, and it was somebody in Ukraine, because in Ukraine you've got a breakdown, obviously, because of the Russian invasion, got a breakdown of the societal order. And one of the things that was done is a lot of people who were in custody post-conviction were let out and given guns and were looting. And you posted this, Adam. Can you describe what that is?
They would basically saran wrap or wrap the guys to a light post, sort of like if they were hazing a rookie in the NFL and they put him up against the goalpost and taped him up and in this case pulled his pants down. But that's what happens in the Ukraine to looters. In San Francisco, they'll throw you a parade. But I want to drill down a little more on the Cain Velasquez situation, which is who decides no bail? Is that just the judge?
Yes, and I'll address the judge on Monday in Santa Clara on the no bail hold on Cain, but the no bail for the serial alleged child molester was also decided by a judge after a hearing. And according to the DA, at least, over their objection.
Could be the possible motivation for a judge to do that? And is it a different judge who you'll see?
I don't know. We'll find out on Monday and drill down on that. I don't know what the motivation is, although I believe that there were emergency bail schedules that were in play. Part of the You know, you and I have talked on this show about the COVID Constitution. You know, part of the problem with the COVID Constitution is that the writ of habeas corpus, which has never been suspended, I don't believe, since the Civil War, was suspended during COVID in California. And one of the ways, the remedies for that was, okay, if we're going to hold somebody in custody ad infinitum without any speedy trial rights, then we will deal with the bail situation by letting people out so that we don't keep them in custody, which I understand. But you and I have also talked about there shouldn't be in the criminal justice system a one-size-fits-all solution. That makes no sense. You can't go through life with a one-size-fits-all. Why it's imported in the criminal justice system is beyond me.
Gary had something he wanted to add.
Mark actually covered it for me. I wanted to point out that the DA, you know, you asked about them being a Soros-backed. The DA actually objected to this guy getting a no bail, so I thought that was interesting.
Right, so he's not that.
Right, and by the way, the DA has now filed paperwork. I'm just talking about public filings where they said that Kane is not entitled to the presumption of innocence. I'll send it to Gary and he can show it. They're actually making the argument that for purposes of bail, Kane is not entitled to the presumption of innocence. I mean, the whole thing is so stunning to me. It's such a breakdown in the system that you just wonder how. You and I talked about this last week too, Adam, this pendulum swing that is going on and the whiplash that you and I have from you can't put your finger in the wind. You can't even, the wind is blowing so fast each way, it's hard to know which way is going.
Well, have you ever experienced a presumption of innocence thing from the DA?
Yes, I have. And I successfully argued you don't get to reverse the presumption of innocence for purposes of bail. I thought that was a fight that we'd put to rest years ago. So I was rather taken aback by, in this case, the district attorney of Santa Clara is actually arguing there's no presumption of innocence. I don't even understand what they're talking about. There's an evidence code section that they're basing it on. The evidence code doesn't trump the Constitution. So I don't even know what they're talking about. Is it because it's high profile? And because it's high profile, and we've got a guy who's, I jokingly told you, I had Gary give me the background. I mean, Kane is variously described as maybe the GOAT of all time in the UFC as a heavyweight fighting champion.
Yeah, he's definitely, as Gary said, in that conversation with only maybe two, maybe three other gentlemen. So now... and you've told me in the past, it's harder to win a case when your client is incarcerated versus free. And it's harder to ascribe a percentage point to it, but it might have two digits. I don't know. So what is your prediction? Can you prognosticate?
I'll just tell you that based on the case that we had 10 years ago, that I described to you, my prediction is that no right-thinking person, based on what the DA is saying, I'm not saying anything other than taking what the DA is out there saying, it's an abomination and it's a complete breakdown of the criminal justice system, and I hope to remedy that.
All right. Well, you can hear more about this if you listen to the Adam Carolla show, which will be on up tomorrow. Mark was generous enough with his time to chime in to that one as well. I, for a change, have a hard out. So I think in lieu of introducing another subject, we'll cap it at Vasquez. Godspeed, Mark. And Kane's a lucky guy to have you in his corner. And in this particular case, it actually applies. So, until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos and Gary Smith saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.